And a very good afternoon to you. How you doing this Tuesday afternoon? It is the 2nd of April 2021. Thanks for joining me. It's me, Richie Allen. I'll be with you until 7 o'clock. You know that by now. Let's just get on with the programme.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, Jean Murray is a very interesting Irish lady. I've been introduced to her in the last 12 months or thereabouts, and she's got a very, very, very well-written blog too, a WordPress blog. I'll tell you more about that later on. She's been writing on it about the Irish response to coronavirus and has got some interesting things to say. Jean Murray will be on the programme this hour. And in the second hour, James Parloff, the author and broadcaster, doesn't need much introduction. I don't think I need to tell you too much about James. James will be with me in hour two. Lots to discuss with him. And as usual, and I think you know this by now, you don't need me to tell you by now, if you'd like to reach me during the programme, the way to do that is via the medium of Twitter. That's how you reach me. It's been another glorious day. It's lovely. Bit chilly, mind, but the sun is out and we won't complain. It's lovely. How has your day been then? Tell me. I really do mean it when I ask you. Now, the Brazilian variant has been narrowed down. They're tracking down the Brazilian variant. And they're telling us that they've narrowed it down to 379 houses. Somebody is on the run around the country with the Brazilian variant. But not to worry, because Marshal Matt Hancock is on the case. Here's Sky News presenter Sarah Hewson.
Good afternoon. The Health Secretary says the search for a missing case of the Brazil COVID variant has been narrowed down to 379 households in the southeast of England. Matt Hancock says officials are contacting each of those homes to try to locate the infected person. It comes amid concern that the variant, known as P1, is more transmissible than the original strain. Five other cases of the Brazil variant have been detected in the UK, three in Scotland and two in South Gloucestershire.
But thank God that Marshal Matt Hancock is on the case. Here he is with the update on the Brazilian variant, the fugitive.
We've identified the batch of home test kits in question. Our search has narrowed from the whole country down to 379 households in the southeast of England, and we're contacting each one. We're grateful that a number of potential cases have come forward following the call that we put out over the weekend, and our current vaccines have not yet been studied against this variant, and we're working to understand what impact it might have. But we do know that this variant has caused significant challenges in Brazil. So we're doing all we can to stop the spread of this new variant in the UK, to analyse its effects, and to develop an updated vaccine that works on all these variants of concern.
An updated vaccine. I bet you're surprised to hear that. There will be updated vaccines right soon that will deal with the Brazilian variant and all the other variants as well. More on that later on. Did you read about the nutty professor who says that joggers should wear masks? Did you read that? I'm sure you did. We got into this pre-Christmas, I can't remember on which particular programme, but this woman, Trish Greenhalgh, a professor at Oxford University, has been bleating on about this, about joggers wearing masks, for some time now. She was on Good Morning Britain today. Here she is.
No doubt the virus is in the air. There is no doubt that you can catch it if you inhale air that someone else has exhaled. And as Piers described beautifully, the exercising jogger, the puffing and panting jogger, you can feel their breath come and you can sometimes actually feel yourself inhale it. So there's no doubt that there is a danger there. I do agree that wet, soggy masks are not a good idea. But for goodness sake, I've been for a run this morning. Not only did I put my T-shirt in the wash, but I put my mask in the wash as well. So the fact that they get, contaminated is not a reason for not wearing them. It's not that you're going to do anything with that mask apart from wash it. The other thing to say is that 40% of COVID cases happen by catching it from people who have no symptoms. So you're jogging along, you think you're fine, and then the next day you develop symptoms of COVID, but you've actually breathed that COVID onto someone, perhaps, you know, an old lady walking a dog or something like that. So I think it's really important to be
Okay, well, look, let's bring in...
Yeah, Piers Morgan there jumping in. It gets worse there. Trish Greenhalgh is bad enough. Another useful idiot you'll see a lot on UK television, and you will hear on UK radio, is a professor called Devi Sridhar, or Sridhar. Same show, she agrees with the batshit crazy Trish Greenhalgh. Susanna Reid with the question, then Devi Sridhar.
So when we do walk past someone who is huffing and puffing in our face, how likely are we to pick up a case of COVID?
Well, it really depends how close...
Who huffs and puffs in anybody else's face? On the street, on the pavement, on the footpath or on the sidewalk? Who's going about breathing in people's faces? I mean, you're outdoors, right? This is the UK, right? It's always windy, right? Always. It's freezing most of the time as well. You're not going to give anybody any infection outdoors, no matter how virile the infection is or the virus is. Anyway.
How close they are to you and how heavily they're breathing. And I agree completely with Trish that actually, you know, this can spread through the air. And so it is important that runners should think, and I do think, where am I running? And I'm trying to be attentive to pedestrians because the sidewalks are there for pedestrians in busy areas and high streets. If you're out in a park, then take off your mask and run freely. So I think we need some consideration for each other right now. We're in a pandemic and just, you know, think how it feels for other people. You know, if you're going to cycle in a busy area, wear a mask.
Why would make it illegal?
Oh, here comes the utterly, utterly useless Piers Morgan.
Legal for joggers to run along high streets. I would. With lots of pedestrians. I think it's just completely madness in a pandemic. And I would say they can do it slowly if they wear the mask, but you've got to wear a mask on high streets.
Professor,
I get the wider park issue is a different thing.
Yeah. Piers Morgan says he would make it illegal to jog in high streets or in built-up areas unless you were wearing a mask. Lovely. And you probably read today, if you are keeping in touch with richieallen.co.uk, which is my website, you may very well have read that Susan Hopkins, that's Professor Susan Hopkins, a member of SAGE, the group of scientists which is advising the UK government, she admitted last night during a briefing at Downing Street, stood alongside Matt Hancock, the health secretary, she said, did Hopkins, that it is being considered. What is being considered? Well, recommending that people wear two face masks. They're considering it. They've charged a committee with the responsibility to decide whether or not to update the advice to people to wear a second face covering. What next? Nappies? What do you call them? Across the pond? Diapers? What next? Jonathan Van Tam and Chris Whitty will say that they've discovered that methane incubates the virus. Methane incubates the virus, eh? So dropping a silent one and trying not to laugh as your mates try and discover the culprit, that might be transmitting the virus. You can't do that, eh? New slogans maybe? Hands, face, space, nappy. Stay home, protect the NHS, wear your nappy. Sounds ridiculous, but why not? And by the way, wearing a face mask during exercise can kill you. And it has killed people. Now, forgive me, I can't remember the exact incident, but it was reported in UK media last year that a jogger died as a result of wearing a face mask. And I want to thank Morris Kenny for reaching out via Facebook. How you doing, Morris? And it was sad news that he told us about. Morris's dad passed away in December. And he says, Richie, I'm glad you've highlighted this madness regarding masks and joggers. My dad, Paddy, was a healthy 85-year-old and ran 5K 3 to 4 times a week before lockdown. He ate a healthy and balanced diet and he was a store of knowledge on health and training. He was also a devout Catholic and never broke a law in his life. He died last December. He was so law-abiding that he even ran with his mask on. My mum found him on the landing at 4 o'clock in the morning. We're still waiting on the autopsy, but I would bet the farm that he died of lack of oxygen, says Morris Kenny. And he went on to say something nice about the radio show. Thanks, Morris. I really appreciate that. Genuinely sad to hear about your dad. But what a man he must have been to be running 5K a few times a week in his 80s. Wonderful stuff. I hope I'm able to do that if I live to be 80, that is. Now, there's no nowt so queer as folk. It's a great English saying, isn't it? Richard from Worthing phoned in the James O'Brien show on LBC Radio. Richard's high-flying, powerful executive wife is working from home and it's doing nothing for Richard's masculinity.
First of all, I have to say that I really, really love my wife.
Yes. Okay.
But she...
What the feck is so funny about saying I really love my wife? James O'Brien's a strange little dude, isn't he?
Obviously, pre-COVID, she worked in an office. Post, she's been working at home every day. She's got a very big job and she keeps the whole family going, which is great. The downside that I'm finding, and I've heard no one else talk about this, and I don't know whether it is just me, is I'm really... I really dislike it because I've got my corporate wife at home.
Oh.
I've seen a side of my wife that I never have ever seen before, ever.
Oh, boy.
And I really don't like it because Obviously one of our bedrooms is now her huge office.
Yes.
And all I hear coming out of this room all day is corporate arguments and corporate
Is she quite high-powered? Is she quite high-powered?
Yes, she is. And, you know, sometimes I'll walk past the room and she'll be in a meeting and the door gets slammed on me.
Really?
Because she's doing something private in a meeting. And I'm like, but this is my house. This is my space. And my house has now become an annex of her office and her corporate company and all that sort of stuff. And I feel so depressed about it because I love her dearly, but I'm seeing a side of her that I never saw before and I don't particularly like.
Doesn't like it very much. He thought little wifey went to the office and fannied around with a few press releases. Turns out that she's quite the executive and he's not liking it one bit.
I don't particularly like.
I mean, the obvious allegation at this point would be that you're being a bit sexist, but I'm not hearing you saying you want her in the kitchen baking cakes or anything like that. You just want your home to be a place business is not done, really.
Where her company isn't in my home 24 hours a day. I know, absolutely. Listen, we had a kid 9 years ago.
Yeah, for all I might take the piss out of Richard and say, look, when the wife is going on with all that corporate speak and all that high-powered stuff, just give her a good-fashioned old seeing to. Couldn't say that on commercial radio. Of course, I'd be joking. There's a very serious issue here. The workplace invading the home as a result of coronavirus. For as long, I suppose, as people still have their jobs, it's not ideal, is it? We'll leave that one there. The time is exactly 12 minutes past 5 o'clock. It is the Richie Allen Radio Show. I am live from Salford. James Perloff and Gene Murray are my guests today. Tweets, please, to @BBGRichie. That is the Twitter handle. If you leave a message on Facebook, I might see it as well. As far as the mask wearing goes, Robert Watson poses a good question on Twitter. If they advise people to wear two masks and people take it on board and begin wearing a second mask. Wow. Robert says, is that 106 million masks discarded every day if you wear two? That's a very good question, that. And we joked, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago, because the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control in the United States, recommended that people use a bit of hosiery. It recommended that people get a bit of some tights, basically, to secure your face mask. So if you have a surgical face mask on and you're worried about your emissions escaping from the sides or from the top or the bottom of your mask, the CDC said, why not get a pair of pantyhose, cut them up and secure the mask to your face by pulling the pantyhose down over the top of your head. I do mean it. I do believe it now. At first it was just a joke. I thought, well, yeah, it's just a joke, really. I see them in a little room sitting around, thinking, what can we make these cretins do next? That's how they see us. They see us as useless eaters, as morons, as scum, basically. That's how they see us, right? As ants underneath a microscope. What folly can we get them to engage in next? Let's get them wearing 2 or 3 face masks. Why not? Let's get them wearing masks while jogging. Which, seriously, people, could give you a coronary. It could result in you dropping stone dead of a heart attack. I am a runner. I'm a good runner. I run some pretty good times for a guy in his mid-40s. Wearing a face mask would kill me while running. I'm pretty sure of it. Anyway, hi to William. The William in Scotland. He says, Richie, there has been a really serious strain since the start of the plandemic, and it's called tyranny. Its symptoms include increased drug use and deaths, anxiety, depression and suicide. Luckily, the governments are not here to keep... Luckily, he says, our governments are here to keep us all safe. Thank you, William. Louis Mack tweets, Richie, hearing the word pandemic is seriously pissing me off. Its overuse is wearing thin. Absolutely, Louis Mack. There never has been a pandemic. The statistics don't bear it out, you know. Hi to Molly B and to Shambhala. Hi to Chris Morell. Hi to Kieran or Kieran. Thanks for your tweets. It's at BBG Richie. Shall we move on? Scottish John in Austin says every bloody Tory should wear at least 2 masks. Amen. Hear, 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 hear. Let's quickly move on because this is interesting now. When I say they, it's the royal they, but not the royal family they. The royal they, the so-called authorities, can now measure how many people climate change is killing in any given year, allegedly. Now, they can't. They can't, of course. It's garbage, but they're saying that they can. Here's Sky News presenter Jane Secker.
At least 1,500 UK deaths are directly attributable to human-induced climate change since the year 2000, according to a new study. Scientists at Oxford University say the people were killed in UK heat waves in 2003 and 2018, and that the 4 major floods between 2000 and 2016 caused around £6.5 million worth of damage. Well, Dr. Frederic Otto is the author of that study and acting director of Oxford University's Environmental Change Institute, and she joins us now. Thanks very much for speaking to us about this. How did you reach this figure, first of all?
Yeah, how did you manage it? Dr. Friederike Otto, Climate Science, Oxford University. This was her answer.
What we did in this study was we looked at all the extreme events that happened in the UK since the year 2000 and looked at the damages from these extreme events. So, and for heat waves, the main damages are increased mortality, so death. And then we looked at different studies that have attributed the changes in the intensity and the frequency of these heat waves because of man-made climate change, and brought these two together. And so we estimated how many of these deaths from heat waves that we know have occurred from just national statistics data are actually attributable to climate change. And the important aspect of this study is not the exact number, because of course, with statistical estimates, there are always slightly different ways of how you can do that. But the point is really that we have actually all the tools and data to bring these statistics together. So damages from extreme events and our knowledge about climate change. And with that, we could build an inventory of the impacts of climate change today. And we could have known this for years, how much climate change has cost the UK and how much death have occurred.
Did you understand any of that? I didn't. Didn't make much sense to me. Back to the presenter.
I'm just interested in how you are able to put a figure on it in the sense that, you know, if you look at a floodplain and you look at flood water, yes, you can say that human behaviour has led to increasing levels, increasing impacts of flood water in that area because perhaps we have built on a floodplain. But that's a human, you know, that's our fault for building on the floodplain, isn't it?
Yes, and of course that's a different aspect. So with what we have done is looking at how much higher was the flood level because of climate change, and that means that some houses that have now been flooded would not have been if it wasn't for climate change.
And what kind of fuckery is this?
Yeah, just give over. It's garbage. But listen, pay very close attention to climate change and lockdowns. Spoken quite a bit about this now in recent months. Lockdown, climate change, going to hear a lot of it in the coming months. This is just the first shot across the bows. You know, this notion that, oh, we can now calculate scientifically how many people climate change is killing. Nonsense. Utter nonsense. Heat waves, no matter where they happen around the world, kill people. Of course they do. It's the way it's always been. Ask anybody who's lived through a heat wave in Spain. I lived in Spain for years. Heat waves kill people. Nothing to do with climate change. We'll leave that there. And before we move on, this made me laugh this afternoon. Pontins. Pontins is a holiday company that runs camps, holiday camps, chalets. I don't know if Pontins staff go around wearing yellow coats. Do they, or is that Butlins? That's Butlins, isn't it? Pontins even run these often seaside, well, pretty much always seaside camps, holiday camps, where you get these all-inclusive deals. Well, Pontins has got a red face today, if an entire company can have a red face, because it has agreed to change its working practices after being found out blacklisting Irish surnames to avoid having gypsies and travellers coming to the camps in the summer.
You junkies bastard, yeah. You junkies bastard.
Yeah, Simon's not happy. Apparently, Pontins was blacklisting certain Irish surnames to screen out bookings for its holiday parks, basically to lessen the chances of travelling folk rocking up in the summer. According to the I newspaper today, or online paper, I should say, there were 40 names on the Pontins blacklist, including Boyle, Keefe, Gallagher, O'Donnell, that's a red flag there, O'Donnell, McGuinness, Murphy and O'Reilly. Staff monitored calls and refused or cancelled bookings made by certain people with an Irish accent or surname, and Pontins' commercial vehicle policy excluded gypsies and travellers from its holiday parks. You can't do that because it's illegal. Bastards. Anyway, here's the Eagles and Life in the Fast Lane. Coming up in a couple of minutes' time, I'll be joined by Gene Murray, live from Dublin. I'm looking forward to Gene coming on. Keep those tweets coming in. It's at BBG Richie on Twitter. Welcome to Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show, live from a glorious Salford. The Eagles, or Eagles, Eagles, you're supposed to just say Eagles. Anyway, Life in the Fast Lane on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Hi to Angela Lambert. How you doing, Angela? And to Jeff. Give Jeff a mention. How you doing, Jeff? Nice to hear from you today. Listen, do tweet at BBG Richie. James Perloff, second hour of the programme. Lots to talk about with James. But before that, then, let's welcome to the programme for the first time. Let me read you this, though, before we do that. Do check out genemurray120.wordpress.com. It's an excellent blog, genemurray120.wordpress.com. I will, of course, put a link to that on Twitter and on Facebook a bit later on. Excellent article by Gene this week entitled "The Winner Takes It All." Let me briefly read a little bit of it. I can write with clarity, writes Gene. Clarity and truth that our government are criminals carrying out the most heinous crimes against their own people. Criminals are people who take payment for committing illegal acts. Our government has been paid to destroy Ireland, its sovereignty and its middle class wealth in order to crash the economy and make us all submissive. They will run over our fallen bodies in their determination to reach the finish line. They have betrayed Ireland and its people. They sold us off to the EU in 2009 when they borrowed billions to bail out the banks that didn't need to be bailed out at all because they are part of the global banking system. Our government signed the 2012 Migration Pact to open borders for 1.5 million emigrants concurrent till 2025, whose sole purpose is to dilute the vote. Our government brought abortion into Ireland. They closed the Catholic and Christian churches. They've launched a massive campaign to advertise a medical product and made threats that nothing will go back to normal unless the population takes this trial product. Great to welcome to the programme for the first time, Jean Murray, live from Dublin. How you doing, Jean?
Hi, Richie. How are you? Thank you for having me on. I'm delighted to be on.
No, the pleasure is mine, Jean. Thanks. It's strong stuff. And before we talk about that, I want to ask you about the protest on Stephen's Green on Sunday last. I think it was called Saturday even. It was called
Absolutely. The
Enough is Enough protest. Thousands of people turned up there, and the Irish media reported that there was violence instigated by the protesters, but the evidence suggests something entirely different happened. Tell us what happened, Jean.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I started protesting about last April 2020. I woke up to the corruption. I found out about the corruption the last few months earlier in the last year. And I found myself, there was a group starting up called Stand Together who were going to the GPO every Saturday to make people aware of what was going on. And I went in there from that Saturday and regularly went every Saturday. Sorry, I'm a little bit nervous as well at the moment.
Don't be nervous, Jean. We know each other through Twitter anyway. You're in good company here, so no, relax. You've got plenty to say now. So anyway, go back to Saturday.
So then, so this Saturday then is the first big protest organised since Christmas. And so a few of the people that I know were all eager to go in. We weren't sure that there was going to be many there. We weren't exactly sure who was organising it. We never organise any protests. We go and support people who are fighting for their rights and freedoms. So likewise, we said, sure, we'll go in. And there may not be that many there because there's never been that many at protests. You know, the amount of people normally would be about 100 people at the GPO. So anyway, lo and behold, I arrived in there. Normally, I'm really early for protests. Apart from the yellow vest protests, which gathered thousands at the customs house. But our little protests would be only a small amount of number. But anyway, so I arrived in there about 2 o'clock to crowds and crowds of people. And I was just unbelievably amazed. And I was delighted. I can tell you the feeling that came over me. And there was young people, so many young people. So the average age of the young people would be like mid-20s to mid-30s. And like I was, this is great, you know. So I did a little, I never normally video, but I did a little bit of video because it was so exciting. So this was just on the button at 2 o'clock. So as I was going around the crowd with the video and whatever, I was right at the top. Or at the front, which was the closest part to Stephen's Green, where the police had barricaded off. And I noticed there was a little bit of shoulders moving among the lads up there. So I went up and I turned off my video at that point. I left the video on for a little bit, but I turned it off then. And there was a lad there now literally instigating and goading the Garda. And the Garda were completely, and when I say lad, he was about 35, well-shaven, well-groomed, respectable looking guy in a decent enough tracksuit, and he was goading the Garda, and the Garda were completely ignoring him. And the few lads that were there with him at that point, I'm not sure where they were with him or they were just there, but he was goading them as well, and he was trying to rile them up. Come on, lads, now, come on, lads, and all of this, right? And I was like, don't really like that. I'm going to move back away a bit from the front, and met a couple of people that I know was talking, chatting in the crowd. And next of all, I noticed something strange. Bottles were being fired from that point into the crowd, which what I was taught was a bit unusual. So at that point, we moved back a little bit because I was saying, OK, this is getting a bit messy. So then what happened was there wasn't a firework straight off, but there was a lot of pushing and shoving. So the lads then in the front of the crowd were getting very, shoulders moving heavy, loud,
agitated,
a little bit aggressive.
Yeah.
So I moved back. There was a man at the corner on a speaker, a respectable man. I would have known him from protests, and he was speaking. So I moved back in behind him then. So out of the way of danger. Immediately then a firework went off. And so what I noticed then was obviously then the police pushed the crowd back. But to me, straight off, I was thinking afterwards, the police had every opportunity to arrest those guys in front.
Do you think the firework came from the guys that were originally goading the Gardaí, Jean? You don't know, but you think it might.
The guy in the grey tracksuit, I definitely didn't see him. Like, he was in it. It was a light tracksuit, And now I know the fireworks were long and skinny. It's possible some of them hide them up their arm. I don't know. I didn't see him with one. I didn't see anybody with them. If they had them there, they had them hidden. But it was it was moments after I moved behind the man with the speaker that the firework went off. Now, that wasn't the one that you would have seen video footage of.
Hey, Jean, we should tell our listeners at this stage. Yes. Jean is right in what she has said about the scale of the protest. It was really encouraging on Saturday, at least from the photographs and video that I saw online. There were a lot of people there, no doubt about that. She's right to say that. Now, as for the firework, the Irish media has jumped all over this and has used that incident. It's an ugly incident. You can see the firework going at the guard. It's a dreadful thing to do. It's terribly wrong, and whoever did it should be arrested and charged for doing it. But the media, of course, has jumped all over it and has basically has tried to paint the protest itself as an ugly, violent protest because of the firework. And I haven't seen any evidence that's true, because everybody else is standing there peacefully making their point. So it's very important to kind of find out who did that. And Jean, I've read from some of the protesters have said, well, this is kind of agent provocateurs. This is maybe somebody sent in there to try and discredit the peaceful protest. Now, we've seen this in the past, and we hear this from time to time. What's your opinion on that, do you think? What do you think?
I absolutely believe that, because we went up to support a salon open, I'll tell you briefly, during the week in Balbriggan. And there was up to 25 people. Within moments, about 30 guards turned up, took our names and addresses, and moved us on very quickly.
This is important now, Jean. Hang on, this is really important. I love this. So a salon owner decided, to hell with this now, I'm going to open, I can't keep closed. And you went up there to support that. Now, when you went up in a group of 30, was it to use the salon or just to show solidarity with the owner?
Show solidarity. And I didn't know anybody who was going up there. I had heard on the girl's Facebook that she was opening up, and I said, I'll go up and give her a bit of support. And so it wasn't like anybody. It was like-minded people met up the same, or it went up to the same place. So it turned out to be about 25 people that turned up, like-minded people. Now, of course, as I got there, I did recognise a few people that I knew. But we were moved on very fast. There were a couple of arrests. There was the Gardaí arrested one married woman without provocation whatsoever. And it was quite aggressive. So this was on an innocent Thursday morning, right? We were innocent, respectable people, going up to support a salon. We had no banners, we had no flags, we had no signs. We were just going up to show some solidarity. So when these guys were provoking the Garda at the front area of that protest on the top of Stephen's Green, the Garda completely ignored them. They let them goad them, so they let this happen. And
could it be, Jean, sorry to interrupt you, that I know nothing about policing now, but I have spoken to one or two police officers over the years, and I understand that they're trained and told to ignore the insults and the goading, that they should only really get involved if their personal space is invaded and if any of the protests or the protesters become in any way violent. So they're supposed to be able to take the abuse in terms of the verbal abuse, maybe.
Yes, I understand that. Absolutely, of course. But because of the nature in the last year of protests and the nature of the lockdowns and the restrictions placed on people and people's patience being worn thin, these police knew quite well, and even said it in the newspaper, they knew who was going to be there. They know who they're going to arrest when they're going to arrest people at protest. Do you know what I mean? There's always the usual lads that are easy to be arrested. Like, unfortunately, the people who would be at work, homeless people, ex-addicts, they're all arrested first. you know, when it comes to these.
Jean, tell me this now. I've got to challenge that. Hang on. Jean Murray is our guest. Nice to have Jean on today. I've known Jean for a while through Twitter. She writes a very, very interesting and very passionate blog, and I recommend you check it out. And you can find Jean on Twitter. Find her through my tweets and give her a follow there. Very interesting woman. Glad she's on. Good to have an Irish woman on, Jean. We don't have enough of them on this programme. I don't mind telling you. Now, when you say that they take easy pickings, like homeless people and addicts, how do you know that? Is that just your opinion, or do you have any evidence to support that?
I've witnessed this. Oh, no, I've absolutely witnessed this. Absolutely witnessed this. And, like, I mean, so as I say, I've been out there at protests this whole past year because it's absolutely scandalous what's happening to the Irish people in Ireland. It's scandalous. Everybody's, as we know what's happening to the Irish people. So I've been at every protest. We went to one at the Dáil one time. I think Justin Barrett was speaking. It was his protest. Justin Barrett from the Irish Freedom Party.
Yeah.
I think. Anyway, so I went along to support that and see what he had to say and whatever. And so I think that was a 1 o'clock protest. I just arrived, and his young wife with three young babies were just beyond the stand. So I was talking to them. And next of all, 40, no less than 40 burly, big bruises of men. Now, pounced on the Irish people, or not the Irish people, I mean on those people that was there.
Yeah.
Pounced. It was like it came out of nowhere. There was possibly more than 40, but I could definitely count 40. And there's a few lads on Twitter that have very good video footage of that. And they were sent there to stop this protest because Justin Barrett was also talking about the Irish people's freedoms being annihilated. And nobody in the Irish government wants this getting out. They don't want this getting out. So that was a definite. We had heard since then somebody had paid these guys to come in and do that at the time. But likewise, back to the people that get arrested. Yes, there's always the vulnerable are always arrested first. Absolutely. The vulnerable and the lower class. Now, it's even gotten to the point like respectable people. I don't mean that the lower class.
No, I know what you mean.
I mean, there's retired solicitors in our group, group of wonderful friends I've met this past year, and older women, grandmothers, retired teachers. You know, these people are getting arrested and they're getting brutally, aggressively treated by Garda in Ireland at the moment. This is not a lie, you know.
Tell me this, Jean. I know you're not lying. Yeah. I've seen evidence of it. I believe that the Irish police are becoming increasingly,
not all of them, but some of them
are becoming increasingly heavy-handed. I'm always fascinated. Now, I'm going to put my hands up. And some of my listeners, I get criticised for this, but I have enough to do during the week with what I do here. I'm not looking for any praise for that, but I get criticised for not going to protests. It's not that I'm scared of going to protests. I just don't have the bloody time. I have no time.
Mm-hmm.
And this takes up a lot of my time. But when I used to go on protests many moons ago when I was at university and other times, I was always fascinated to try and get a word with one or two of the policemen and women who might be on duty that day. Have you engaged, Jean, or has anybody in your groups tried to engage the Gardaí and ask them, hey, listen, what's going on? How do you really feel about this? You know?
Yes, absolutely.
What's the response?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, I've spoken at a couple of small protests and I've thanked the Gardaí presence many times. For keeping us safe. In fact, there was many attacks on small protests, and we all thanked the Garda, well, you know, for their presence to keeping us safe. I mean, this is crazy stuff what's going on. But yes, I have engaged with Garda personally, and so have the others. But just speaking personally, after writing to all the ministers, TDs and governments all of last year, I decided on a different tactic. I was going to go to my local Garda station and go into them with my complaints of where I felt our rights were being violated and crimes against humanity were being committed. And I got a couple of young Garda, because I'm 54, so I would say mid-40s maybe, and
Yeah, they were quick now. The first couple were quick to kind of like pawn me off and I don't want to know kind of thing. And I was saying, excuse me, I'm treating you with respect. I have genuine concerns of crimes against humanity right here at the moment. I said, my business is being shut down. My auntie is in a hospital locked in with no visitors. My brother-in-law, likewise, is locked in a nursing home. I said, they're brokenhearted, these people in a hospital. What? This is crimes against humanity.
And these Gardaí must have senior relatives. Many of them must have people who are in care homes. They can't see. They must have brothers and sisters whose businesses are going to the wall, Jean. I mean, you said you've had personal experience of your own business being... and that's what it is. Yes. I mean, it's a tyranny to tell people, to tell any man or woman, listen, you can't make a living anymore. You've got to put yourself into dire straits financially. You know, because we believe that there's an infection going around. And I mean, it's absolutely, it's utter tyranny. And you said to me on the phone today, we had a brief chat before coming on today, that you came about this programme in the last 12 months. Would it be fair to say, Jean, that the lockdown itself has been ground-shaking for you in terms of, you know, your own perspective on life and on things in general? Or before the coronavirus thing, before the pandemic, were you beginning to see things a bit differently anyway, or was that the catalyst for you?
Well, I started to, in the 2008 crash, I remember, I didn't know exactly what was going on. I just thought it was a crash. But I do remember what was happening to people that I knew very well. They were losing their houses. They were taking their own lives. My own husband's business was virtually annihilated. And there was, people were losing their homes. And I remember at the time writing into the government and all of our media stations at home here at the time. And I did it for a couple of years, like, you know, writing in and saying, my God, this is terrible. This is happening, whatever. You know, I was going crazy at the time. I didn't know exactly what was happening. But I just felt that the government were handling it wrong. That was my take on it at the time. And my daughter was quite young at the time. So that's she's 16 now. So she was only a little one. And so I was kind of busy with that. And I was working as well. So I kind of let it go then. But this January 2020 gone, I was watching this virus coming from Wuhan because my son and his wife were going on their first cruise with the babies, the two babies. I have two grandchildren. And I was cautious of where this virus was going because I knew they'd never go on a cruise if there was a virus. You're not allowed once you have a cold or a sniffle. So I start watching it very, very early on. And I was watching every moment from the media spreading the panic and then lockdowns. And when it came to February, then it was on the Irish media. The Irish government are not acting fast enough with lockdowns. I was pen to paper. No way. Do not do a lockdown. You're going to destroy the economy. Now, I knew nothing of the information because I hadn't started research at that time. But I knew what was coming. I knew they were goading for a lockdown. I knew there was something to do with crashing the economy. And I immediately put pen to paper. And I said, if you lock this country down, we're going to crash. We've only just, I personally felt, and my husband's business, and even the retails and even the pub owners, only personally felt a turnaround profit-wise in 2019.
Wow.
It took that long to recover from the last crash.
To get back to where you could look ahead to the future with some sort of confidence, basically.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Like just the turnaround, you can see, oh, wow, light at the end of the tunnel. You know, and I know for a fact pub owners were the same. And I know for a fact that closed retailers were hit. So we were the three big hit in 2008. First of all, I suspect now what I know after research, and I know that crash was on purpose to destroy and annihilate the independent Irish wealthy builder. And that's exactly what it did. There were so many Irish builders that were annihilated under that crash.
You're absolutely right. You're 100% right to say that. That's what that crash was all about. And you said when you saw it coming, your daughter was much younger. I remember speaking to an economist at the time, well, about a year later, in fact, who said to me, Richie, it's astonishing. The people of Ireland, the people of England, the people of Spain, should be bailed out. The people should be bailed out, not the banks. Let the banks fail. Let them collapse. Yeah. And then let new financial institutions grow out of the ashes. That was the right thing to do. But of course, it was a massive land grab. I mean, us being Irish, the two of us, we could talk about vulture funds all day long and what they are and how people's properties were robbed from them, stolen from them over a debt that they never owed. It's horrendous. I can ask you this, Jean. Do you think, I mean, this is all speculation. I mean, you're obviously educated. You've educated yourself, which is the best type of education, in my opinion. But do you feel that what happened in 2008 is connected somehow to what happened last year?
Absolutely, 100% connected. It's the second part, or maybe even the third part, but it's absolutely the connection to that 2008 crash. This is the finishing off. I mean, it's like, it's only when you see what's happened, when you put things together, it's like a jigsaw puzzle, and you can see the closure. Even if you knew nothing, even you weren't literate, you can see what's happening. Closing down pubs and restaurants and retail shops and businesses is going to finish them off.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to finish
these
people
back.
Off.
They'll never come
because,
back.
Because, they never come back, because I know from a personal experience, it took us that long to come back. And another thing I want to say in relation to what happened, it took so long for the Irish people to stand up, or the Irish men, also connected. About 20 years ago, they brought in the health and safety training into the construction sites, maybe a little over 20 years ago. And that health and safety destroyed the Irish man in the sense of it weakened them. All of a sudden, the Irish builder, who's a rough lad, do you know what I mean? All of a sudden had to think about their safety. And they have to do regular safety, health and safety courses, in the construction business. And I know in other businesses too, it's all about health and safety now. So people in the last, our men were, indoctrinated into being safe in the last 20 years. It was almost like hypnotic, which is exactly what happened last year, was stay safe, you know, all of this.
Infantilizing people. Hey, do you know, it's very interesting you bringing up now the health and safety rollout in Ireland, because at the same time that was going on, I know this to be true, men in the building trade were also being told that they were horrible, sexist, misogynistic bastards. They were told that, you know, they had to go on courses and all sorts of stuff. So I hear what you're saying, Jean. You might be adding two and two and making five, but I don't think you are. Some people would say she is, because, there was certainly an emasculation agenda there. Not just in Ireland, but elsewhere, you know. I joke sometimes on the programme about what happened to Gary Cooper, Jean. What happened to John Wayne, you know.
Yeah,
but there are some people who would say, well, these were toxic men. But I don't agree with that either. I think you're bang on. Let me just remind our listeners who we're listening to. Do check out Jean, folks, on Twitter. I'll tell you now, her Twitter handle is @JeanAndAnto. That's J-E-A-N for Jean, and Anto, A-N-T-O. Jean and Anto on Twitter. Find her. Read the blog there. Jean Murray, live from Dublin this afternoon on the Richie Allen Radio Show. The time coming up for 9 minutes to 6 o'clock. And you think then that kind of emasculation then is maybe goes some way to explaining why, until recently, because it's good news that there were thousands in Stephen's Green on Saturday, but before that, Irish men have kind of nowhere to be seen, really.
Absolutely. It was definitely changed the Irish man. And as you say, you quite rightly point out that the man was targeted also as being a sexist rapist. And there's an ad recently that came out on RTE television, and it's the girl running in the park. And the guy says, well, can I help you? Oh, she was stretching. And he said, can I help you out with that stretch? And she goes, ooh, and runs off.
Right.
I mean, that never happens. You're never approached by a man in the park to help you stretch. You know, and even if there was a 0.0001%, it still is not right that they made these young men be afraid to approach any young woman. And this has been happening the last couple of years as well. And it just made them afraid. Another thing that the poor man has to protect themselves against, because if the girl is going to cry rape, and that's not discrediting any
no,
rape
of course,
cases,
I hear you.
Absolutely
Jean.
Not.
Yeah,
but the men were really, really, really targeted, and they were you know, they were shut down and discredited. So when I seen these thousands and thousands of young men and on the streets of Dublin on Saturday, I was so delighted. And just back to the point then when we were at safety, then I met up my other friends. We were at safety at the Gaiety there. Many, many, many rockets went off. Now, many, I can't tell you, could have been 20, could have been 30. Another friend of mine, her ankle was injured. What I'm saying
by a rocket,
Jean,
was it? Sorry to interrupt. Her ankle was injured by a rocket, was it? Going off, yeah. And are you certain, Jean? Because, look, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't say this. There will be people listening saying, you know, Jean, obviously anti-lockdown, like you, Richie, people will say, you're giving her an easy ride now because she's bound to say that the rockets were fired by agent provocateurs. Are you certain, Jean, that it wasn't genuine protesters doing that? Because people pissed off, you know. I'm not saying I agree with it, but listen, I can understand why somebody whose business has gone down the Swanee because of lockdown, if they, I wouldn't condone it, but if they did have fireworks and they were just absolutely at their wit's end, I could understand it. But you're saying you're certain that it was coming from somewhere else, that?
I am absolutely certain because I did hear in relation to word on the street before the Saturday that there was a lot of young lads starting to get angry at the police, rightly so, because they were stopped. I mean, there was young lads who were saying, God, I wish I could go to Dublin Mountains for a walk. And I would say, well, why don't you? Oh, because you can't, because you're not allowed. You know, God help them. So this year of this, these poor lads are angry, for sure. You know, but I would know a lot of these young lads that they were, I'm talking about there now. Definitely not the type to be throwing fireworks into the crowd, for sure. And even the lowest of the low, you know, that you would say, you know, violent lads, they in the Dublin city centre, you probably like, you know, wouldn't be a good character. They would never hurt their own Irish people. They wouldn't. They just wouldn't. And the other thing is, why I'm saying is that the police had ample opportunity. They had ample Garda presence. I think there was about 400 or 500 Garda presence in that area alone, right? There was, if they knew, they said they knew about the protest. If they knew about the protest, why did they not do checks and searches
beforehand, and, which doesn't make any sense, Jean.
Because they were already doing the checkpoints. You were stopped if you were in a car at every point. Why didn't they do checkpoints? Why didn't they cordon off that whole... They blocked Stephen's Green, so it made it actually even easier for them if they wanted to search any of the people in the crowd.
And these are questions that the Irish media should be asking of the Gardaí.
That's right.
Shouldn't they?
But like, Irish media are just absolutely
disgraceful, isn't it? Well, you know, anybody who does what you do and says, look, lockdown is wrong, it's illegal, everybody is labelled as some sort of far-right neo-Nazi. You mentioned Justin Barrett there, who by my research, if I, off the top of my head, I think he's from Cork. He founded the National Party. I've looked into him in the past, and I can't find anything the man that has ever done that would be of any concern to me. But according to the Irish media, he's some sort of far-right thug. But he isn't.
You know,
and rather than bring him on and interview him, I think he went to...
Yeah, they're labelling people. Yeah. They're labelling everybody now. I mean, I looked at the governments were on their Twitter, you know, Helen McEntee and Simon Harris and Leo Varadkar, you know, and all these far left or far right people, thugs, us people that are paying, we've paid up to close to 50% tax all of our work and life and still paying it. And we put these people in government positions and they have the audacity to stand up there and call us thugs because we are saying to them, no way are we letting you take our children's freedoms away from them. You know, how dare they call us thugs? How dare they? There is only one criminal, as I said many, many times, my famous words last year were mass corruption and criminals in the Dáil. And it's so sad because they are doing this to our people, our trustworthy people who were unfortunately indoctrinated in the school system to behave, to follow the rules, and then in the jobs. And should God help them, they're only following the rules. You know,
this is the thing, you know, and so many of these TDs will have their own children. Some of them will have their own grandchildren. They must know what it's going to do to them. But that's a story for another day. Look, we've got about three yes. minutes left today, Jean. I've had a tweet from somebody called Franz Hans. And Franz sent me I haven't had time to watch this because we're on air. He just sent it just this minute. Or she, I think it's he maybe. And it's a video of the person who fired the rocket on Saturday. And it's a video taken just before that. So I've asked Fran, does Fran think that the person was a genuine protester or somebody in there to, you know, to make mischief and to discredit the other protesters? But Jean, we'll come back to that another day. Just before we go, I want to ask you this before we go today. Thanks for your time, by the way. I've loved having you on. Before we go, I mean, I posted this morning on my own website. I got the information from RTE, the Irish national broadcaster. But today it was announced that, I mean, Ireland isn't the biggest country in the world. We've got nearly 5 million people there. But only 494 people are currently in Ireland's hospitals with coronavirus, allegedly. That's nothing in a country of nearly 5 million people. And yet the academics or the scientists who advise the Irish government, they won't hear a word of ending lockdown. So you don't have to be a genius to understand that there's something else going on here. I mean, COVID hasn't touched Ireland, really. It hasn't done anything, really, to the Irish people. And yet we, and I say we, even though I live in Salford, I'm Irish and I'm proud to be Irish. In my country, in our country, we have the most draconian lockdown measures across the whole of Europe. And there's nothing happening there. What's going on, Jean? What are we going to do?
Well, I can tell you, the thing is, the media has fooled the people. They're lying to the people. They're taking advantage of them. The government is trying to convince we have to be in an emergency situation in order to have the emergency pandemic plan in place, which is why this whole thing is they're pushing these cases, of course. But you made a very good point there, because I said this last week, last Thursday, they were watching the RT news and my brother-in-law was in my house, and there was the numbers on the telly of the people in hospital. And as you say, very, very low. The truth is there. They're telling you the truth. The people who are watching the RTE can see the numbers are very low in the hospital. So why do they think there's still an emergency situation? I mean,
there isn't.
You can see the numbers. There is no emergency situation to justify the government putting us in draconian communist and control that is never going to end. I think the Irish people think that it's going to end. It's not going to end. And, you know, now they're talking about putting masks on children in primary school.
Yeah.
And somebody said, oh, if the parents let them do that now, they've really lost it. The parents will let them do that. They will do this because they're, again, just following. Oh, sure, I'm not going to stand away from the crowd. I'm not going to stand away. This young mommy, she knows best. I'm not going to look like I'm in Egypt and she's sending her child in a mask to school. Nobody wants to stand out outside the crowd. Nobody wants to be made a fool of or look like a fool or an idiot or their reputation gone. But you know, at this stage now, it doesn't matter about reputations. We need to just all just get together and forget reputations. We're not going to have anything, never mind a reputation, if this continues on. Never mind if that product gets implemented into our people. They're in serious danger.
This gene therapy drug that is not really a vaccine. Jean, I want to just mention before we part company today, it's jeanmurray120.wordpress.com. That's Jean, J-E-A-N, Murray120.wordpress.com. That's where you'll find the blog. And Jean, as I said already, is on Twitter even. It's at Jean and Anto on Twitter. But you look for my tweets with Jean today. You'll find them and you can follow her there. Thanks for your time, Jean.
Thank you so much, Richie. Lovely talking to you.
It's been a pleasure. It's been my honour. And I'll be inviting you back again, Jean.
Thank you. Will you say hi to Vernon Coleman? Because I really, really, really like him.
He might even be
listening as well. And all your guests.
Thanks so much, Jean.
Take care.
All
Thank
the best.
You.
Bye for now. Jean Murray there, live on the line from Dublin, from Ballya Ó Chlé there. Nice to have Jean on. Like to speak to people in the old country as much as I can. You understand that, don't you? Of course you do. It's coming up for 2 minutes or thereabouts past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, the 2nd of March, 2021. James Perloff will be standing by right soon. Great writer is James and broadcaster. Looking forward to chatting with him. I'm looking at my Twitter now. Did I get a message from... Fran's name is Bernard, by the way. Bernard, who took the video of the guy with the firework, thanks Bernard, came back to say, I don't know if the firework guy was genuine, Richie. It's hard to know. He should be easy to catch if he wasn't a plant, and he should get locked up if he isn't. I have heard he was arrested, but no name given out yet, so I don't know what he was, says Bernard. Thank you, Bernard. Really appreciate that. Ashford is only interactive, isn't it? The Richie Allen Show, live and interactive. My listeners are on the case. I've got some Van the Man Morrison lined up for you right now. This is Dweller on the Threshold. And James Perloff on the other side of that. Ah, yeah. BBG Richie on Twitter. Dweller on the Threshold. Look me up, consume my diary. Van Morrison and Dweller on the Threshold on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Tuesday's programme into the second hour, coming up for 5.5 minutes past 6 o'clock. Loved having Gene Murray on the programme. We'll get Gene back on again, no doubt. Let's get rid of the music and welcome back my next guest, who's no stranger to you at all. And he's been coming on my radio programmes for many years. He really is an excellent author. Great writer. The Shadows of Power. Truth is a Lonely Warrior. I could go on and on and on. He was last on this programme last September to talk to me about his most recent book, COVID-19. Red Pilled, of course. The book is called Red Pilled. But I'll give it its proper title. I bring it up here now. He was kind enough to send it to me in advance of our conversation last September. COVID-19, the book is called, and the agendas to come. COVID-19 and the agendas to come, Red Pilled, September. Excellent read. I recommend you get a copy of it if you can. However, after the book went onto Amazon and sold several thousand copies really quickly, Amazon pulled it. I read it. There was nothing in it. It wasn't true. Let's welcome back to the programme James Perloff. James, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Richie, for having me back on.
Good to have you on. How distressing is that, James? You write a book, you research it diligently, it's very well put together, it reads very well. There isn't anything in the book that is untrue. Yes, there are opinions in there, but those opinions are often from learned men and women who've been through some of the world's most, you know, some of the finest academic institutions. The book sells well, as it should do, and Amazon pull it. How did you feel when that happened?
Well, I was disappointed, but not surprised. Richie, I worked flat out on the book for 3 months, and it has 27 chapters covering, you know, every aspect of COVID, you know, the lockdowns, the economic and health impacts, the effect on civil liberties, the full chapter on the social distancing and masks, and you know, a whole section on how they created the panic, fake news stories in the mainstream media, you know, the early computer modeling by Imperial College that was fake. Conflating it with other diseases, the falsification of death certificates, which is coming up. I see even recently you posted this on Twitter. The Daily Mail was starting to call attention in the mainstream to this. And then the whole nursing home controversy here in the United States, where they put COVID patients into nursing homes. I'm a registered nurse myself, by the way, for 45 years.
I should have mentioned that, James. My apologies. I should always mention that when I introduce you. Thanks for bringing that up. I should mention, I'll make a note for next time. Very important that we know that. Over 40 years, James. 45 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, they were sending patients in nursing homes with COVID who weren't equipped, of course, to deal with it, which killed thousands here in the U.S. And there's a chapter on the accuracy of testing, especially the PCR. And then there's a whole section on the different theories about COVID, the mainstream theory, the bioweapon theory, the 5G theory, which I know that David Icke likes, and other theories such as Andrew Kaufman's and Stephanie Seneff. And then the fourth section's on the deep state's endgame, the population reduction, a chapter on Bill Gates, one on the global vaccines, I've got one chapter called 8 Reasons Why We Don't Need a COVID Vaccine. I've got one just on hydroxychloroquine, which tonight we could add ivermectin. One on the plan for a digital ID, one on the plan for the cashless society and the Great Reset, and one on contact tracing and what that means for our lives. And finally, the last sections on possible scenarios for the future and what hope and encouragement we have. Well, anyway, I turned that into this book, and then on Amazon, I thought they would censor it from day one. But to my great surprise, they were selling it, and it ranked often number one in respiratory diseases, and it did sell 3,500 copies in less than 2 months. But in the meantime, I didn't trust Amazon not to censor it, so I ordered my own separate printing, which I'm used to doing from my own experience publishing. And so October the 15th, I was planning to upload the Kindle digital version since the book was doing so well. And I worked flat out for 4 days on that with a top digital conversion company. And the evening of October the 15th, just before I was going to upload it, I got an email from Amazon saying they were removing my book temporarily because I hadn't specified my rights to the book, which is nonsense. You know, you cannot upload a book onto Amazon print on demand without specifying your rights. The computer will freeze you right there if you don't do that. So I knew that wasn't true, but they said re-upload it with specifying your rights. So I was trying to do that, but they were blocking me from the book, and I figured a way around that. But then 2 hours after the first email, they sent me another one saying that they were now permanently removing the book for content violations. Now, when I wrote this book, I made sure that every single statement was documented. There's almost 300 endnotes. Everything is documented. And in the ebook, it's you can just click on the link and you'll go right to the
very good
video or the article. And so, of course, Amazon doesn't have anybody who's an epidemiologist or a virologist like I was quoting. They couldn't disprove it. So I said, okay, so what content violations did I commit? And all they sent me was a form letter. That form letter said, quote, we reviewed your book and found that it is in violation of our content guidelines. We reserve the right to determine whether content provides a poor customer experience, end quote. Now, actually, as far as customer experience goes, Richie, you know, the book had 92% 5 stars from Amazon customers and 8% 4 stars, and not one customer gave it 1, 2, or 3. So Amazon was basically telling to hell with the customers, we'll tell them what they like and what they don't like.
Yeah, they're very clever. They're very clever not to get into the specifics of the violation.
Yeah.
And Google does the same thing, right?
Google, YouTube, they just say you violated a content community guidelines on YouTube, and they won't tell you what you did. And so I did dicker with them for 4 days, but not with a lot of hope. But I do like Amazon's system. They could get the book out very quickly all over the world. But 4 days after their censorship, my own printing came in. And so I picked up where they left off. And I was very fortunate because Russia Today and Global Research and Zero Hedge and American Free Press, they all picked up the story of the censorship. And that gave the book a lot of publicity. And I, one thing I did suffer from the Amazon banning was they were supplying the book to mainstream distributors, other mainstream distributors like Barnes & Noble. And so that temporarily took it off. And a lot of people mistakenly thought that Barnes & Noble and other distributors had banned it, but it's just on Amazon. So I found my own mainstream distributor who has gotten the book back into all those places. And I'm very pleased to say that the book is now at the UK Book Depository, which ships all books for free. And recently the book ranked as high as 1,200 on their sales ranking. Right now it's at around 4,000. One of the things that problems I had initially was that people in the UK wanted the book and they couldn't get it because the shipping costs from the United States were prohibitive. Well, now they can get it from the UK Book Depository. And actually Waterstones was listing it for a while. That was through another distribution system I had. And now they say it's unavailable at Waterstones. But I think that's just because they ran out. I'm hoping it'll get back there again. The other thing, Richie, before I throw it back to you, is since I couldn't put up an Amazon Kindle version, I decided to make it a free ebook. I felt that was the best revenge. So on my website, which I had to change because my website was under attack. I went from jamesperloff.com to jamesperloff.net. I was being blocked on my old website by Facebook. Emails were not getting to me from my contact form. I was under a lot of attack. I just sent people the ebook, would end up in the spam folder. So I got a new website up now. And if people want a free copy of the ebook, I have it in three different formats: PDF, EPUB, and Mobi, which worked with Kindle, and that's for free. And because I decided, you know, we're at the end of our rope here, Richie. The world is very close to this great reset, and I'm not going to worry about whether or not I make money on an ebook. Just get it out there. And I tell people who I send it to, share it with your friends. And a lot of people have written back, said they sent it to their entire email list. So that's very pleasing to me. I just want to get the information out there.
That's very generous. And I like that. I do like the website, by the way, jamesperloff.net. It's a brighter looking site than your previous site. James Perloff is our guest. James is a writer, a journalist, and a broadcaster. You've heard him on this programme before and other programmes like this. You will have heard James. I recommend the book, and you know I don't recommend very much. Very careful about what I recommend and what I don't recommend. And it's a really, really good read. If you can afford it, please buy it through James's website. Don't take it for free. If you can afford it, don't do that. If you can't afford it, download it and read it. Thanks for coming back, James. Before we move on to talk about the Great Reset and where we are now, what you've talked about in the last few minutes is very important. Amazon is determined, and I know this because the British broadsheet newspapers have covered this extensively in recent years, and that is Amazon's determination to become the world's only publisher. That's where we're going, James. We're approaching fastly. We're fastly approaching a place, a paradigm, where Amazon can determine what exclusively, it can retain for itself that power, exclusively what people read and what people don't read. This is terrifying stuff.
Yeah, you know, the whole New World Order is about consolidation. It's about consolidation of countries, for example, into the EU. It's a consolidation of corporations. You know, the banks, you know, the Rockefellers, Chase Bank, a long time ago, consolidated and merged with the Warburg's Manhattan Bank and became Chase Manhattan. And they merged with J.P. Morgan to become J.P. Morgan Chase. And then they merged with Bank One. And it goes on like that. And the same thing with the media. In 1983, there were 50 corporations running the media in America. Now it's down to 5. It was 6 about a year or so ago, but then Viacom merged with CBS. So there's 5 corporations running the mainstream media in America. By the way, one thing I noticed when I was researching this book, the British media is doing a better job than the American media. And if you read the book, it's not infrequent that I quote the Daily Mail, and the Guardian, and the Telegraph for challenging Bill Gates' narrative. But in America, you won't see anyone do that except maybe Laura Ingraham on the Ingraham Angle on Fox, and occasionally Tucker Carlson. He calls out the lockdowns. But the British media, I will say, I quoted them a lot more than the American media. Although I will say this, I never quoted the Times, not because I'm against the Times, but they never had an article that I found needed to be quoted. And I quoted the BBC one time on the number of increasing cancer cases in Britain due to the lockdown.
Yeah, the BBC is hilarious. The BBC appointed a woman called Mariana Spring, as you well know, a year ago or just over a year ago, to be its disinformation reporter. Insert joke fact here. Checker. Well, she doesn't have to leave the offices, basically. If she wants disinformation, just go next door and she'll get disinformation. It's shocking. James Perloff is our guest. I would hate to burst your bubble, my friend, if the UK media is slightly or has been slightly better than the US in terms of at least trying to push back against this tyranny. I think that's slowly receding. I see the Mail and the Telegraph increasingly championing the vaccine, James. Again, I don't want to burst your bubble, but they are doing that.
Yeah, and that's terrible. And actually, I just saw a couple days ago on one of our cable news networks, they were talking about if the vaccine is liquid gold. And, you know, this vaccine is horrific. As you know, it threatens to change your DNA. And I've been listening to Dr. Cheryl Tenpenny and Dr. Dolores Cahill, who's been a guest on your show. And what they're pointing out is that this is, well, this occurred to me, you know, as a nurse, you know, normally if you get the flu or cold, it kind of centralizes in your throat or your nose. But now with these mRNA vaccines, your whole body is going to start producing the protein, the spike protein from the corona for the COVID-19. And this threatens to have your whole body recognized as containing a foreign protein. And what Cahill and Tenpenny pointed out is a few months down the road, you may go into complete organ failure. Because we've already seen thousands of adverse reactions. We've seen people go into an anaphylactic shock. And of course, there's a whole string of nursing homes in Spain and Norway and the UK,
even
and
here,
the United States, yeah, where many patients have died within a few days of taking the vaccine. And this is reported in alt media and sometimes in foreign media, but not in the mainstream. But it's very, very clear that this is deadly, and it's going to become increasingly deadly, especially as Bill Gates is now boasting of how we'll need a third vaccine. But of course, the coronavirus, like all viruses, mutates. So naturally, you can always claim you need another and another vaccine to take on the latest mutation, which we've always had in the coronavirus, a common cause of the common cold.
That's right. And even today, the health secretary is talking about chasing down somebody who's got the so-called Brazilian variant, this Manaus. It's nonsense. And he did say today that, oh, we will have a vaccine to deal with that. We could talk about vaccine passports. Let me not to criticise you at all, James, but just to pick you up on your point about the US media, I was stunned that a couple of very serious adverse reactions to the vaccine were in fact covered by your media. Now, you can educate me on your media because I don't know as much about it as you do. Maybe it's local Fox affiliates. But when that gentleman came out of Mount Sinai Clinic in New York and dropped dead of after having the vaccine, to be fair to the media, they did cover it. And the lady who dropped dead somewhere in the Midwest, I'm probably getting this all wrong now in terms of the location, but a lady had the vaccine and dropped dead very quickly afterwards. At least it got mentioned. And I like that. I mean, even if they didn't investigate it further, at least they did give it at least a bit of an airing. Because you have had quite a few incidents like that in the US, haven't you? People dying very soon after getting the shot.
Yes, within a couple of days, I remember that lady, Haley, I believe referring to the 28-year-old physical therapist, yeah, who dropped dead 2 days after getting the vaccine. And yes, I saw that report from New York, too. But usually the tendency is to dismiss these as coincidental, which they've always done with vaccine deaths and injury and autism anyway. Just said it was just by chance. They're always chomping at the bit to claim that it was just unrelated or there's no proof. And yet with the deaths from COVID, they're very quick to forget the fact that the person had advanced cancer or advanced lung disease or advanced heart disease and quickly assign it to COVID because they had a PCR test that was positive, which, as you and I both know, is bogus. Even the inventor, Kerry Mullis, the inventor of the PCR test, said it cannot be used to diagnose infectiousness or disease.
You've been around the block a long time, and you've been talking about agendas and cartels, globalists and gangsters, and you've been writing about them for many years. But even you must be astonished at how obviously, how much of a hoax this is. This is not even one that should be difficult for any man or woman, regardless of your IQ level or your intellect. This is wide out in the open how much of an absolute farce this is. Even mentioning Kerry Mullis there and the PCR test. You mentioned earlier on, James, and you were bang on, you were spot on, the Daily Mail. And would you believe today the Daily Mirror is going after the fraudulent assigning of deaths to coronavirus from people who died of something else. How there hasn't been more of a pushback from ordinary men and women like me, it astounds me. You must be flabbergasted. You know, you've talked about so many agendas over the years, and some of them, I wouldn't say complicated, but you can understand why it might be difficult for certain people to take it on board. But this one is obvious, James.
Yes, it is. And the chapter called 8 Reasons Why We Don't Need a COVID Vaccine, I start out by pointing out that even according to the CDC, which uses inflated death numbers, they say that the survival rate is 99.74%. Now, if you look at Stanford, they put it at 98 to 99. And if you have no comorbidities, it's well up over 99. So why, with such a high survival rate, would you want a warp speed vaccine that's never been subjected to proper testing, and we've never used mRNA before on human beings? It just isn't logical. And there's so many things about this that are not logical. We see departures from logic all the time. And medicine is supposed to be a science that is rational and observation-based. We're not seeing it. We see it with the masks, for example. There was a study, I think it was in the Telegraph, where Professors Jefferson and Hennigan of Oxford University looked at 172 studies related to social distancing, and they couldn't find a single one that justified it. And it's like, so where's the science, and where's the science behind the mask? You know, I know there's controversy about germ theory and virus theory, but they say that to see the COVID virus, you need an electron microscope, so it's going to go right through those masks anyway.
We also know
that a study came out of Germany showing that 68% of children suffered physical or psychological harm from wearing masks. You're rebreathing your own toxins, you're lowering your oxygen level, you're increasing your carbon dioxide. And I quote quite a few scientists in my book on this. It's just craziness. It's just and by the way, that if you put on a mask all day, you're breathing in oxygen at about 17 to 18%. Well, according to the American government, OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Hazard Administration and Health Administration, workers are required to have at least 19.5% oxygen in their environment. So that's a violation of U.S. law right there. There's just so many crazy things going on, Richie. But they're using all of the lies, all of the propaganda to push us into lockdown, great reset, total control, and bad health, if not depopulation.
And bad health. And we'll talk about depopulation in a moment. You might be aware that a British professor based in Oxford University called Trish Greenhalgh, she was on national television today asking that joggers wear masks. Now, James, I'm a jogger. I run every single day. I'm in good shape. I'm no world record breaker, but I'm in decent shape. If I wear a mask while running, James, I'm going to die. And I know this. There's a good chance I'm going to have a coronary event. She's on national television, and the presenters are nodding along like those lovely nodding dogs that we used to have at the backs of our cars. Astonishing stuff, this. You know, I despair sometimes, to be honest. How can they just go along with this? I mean, you don't have to be... You were a nurse for so many decades, James. A mask while out running and doing sport could kill you, right?
Oh, sure, because you're not getting the oxygen that your heart and your circulatory system require. And there have been children who have died on playgrounds. I just saw a video yesterday of a German doctor speaking about the deaths of three children from wearing masks, and he was in tears. This is insanity. By the way, I just want to point out that as far as children goes, this is from the British press, and I didn't spot this quote until after I published my book, so I put it on my updates page. I've got more than 100 updates. But the according to the Daily Mail, quote, experts cannot find a single child under 10 who has passed on coronavirus to an adult, despite a huge trawl of data, end quote. And I want just to add to this that a recent study came in from China of nearly 10 million people. They couldn't find one case of asymptomatic transmission. And the same thing with the University of Florida. So the question is, why are we forcing children who don't die from this? Now, I'm not saying they won't release something in the future that will impact children, but I always add that disclaimer. But right now, so far, COVID for children is nothing more than a cold. And there's no observational evidence. They may have hypothetical computer models, but there's no observational evidence. They pass it on to grandma. So there's just no reason for children to be sitting behind plexiglass and not and forced to isolate at lunch and not talk to each other during playtime. This is insanity. It's so destructive, and no evidence behind it. Again, the logic just completely vanishes. And so you know this is a political agenda, and I talk to people about this all the time. And when you talk to people one-on-one, I find it's effective. They usually will agree, in my experience, unless they're completely blue-pilled and matrixed.
Well said, James. James Perloff's website, by the way, is jamesperloff.net. And that's P-E-R-L-O-F-F, if this is the first time you've listened to James. I'm sure you're seeing the same thing, James, in the last 12 months. I mean, we've seen an exponential growth in listenership here because of coronavirus.
Great.
People looking, and I'm sure you've seen the same. I'm sure your website numbers are even bigger in the last 12 months. So go to jamesperloff.net. I recommend strongly that you read the book and then you share the book, COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, Red Pilled. If you're on his website and if you have the means to buy the book, it's important that you do that. You've got to support the independent media with your wallet when you can, or your purse. If you can't, as James said already, he won't mind you downloading the book there. Yeah, we've had it here in the UK as well. They're asking secondary school students to wear the masks. In Ireland, in my country, my home country, they're considering asking primary school students to wear the mask as well. And there's little or no blowback. Well, we've already spoken about the media, James. Can I ask you this, James? You've got a new president there. When we had 4 years of Donald Trump, of course, and I've been of the belief for many, many years that right, left, it's the same, you know, it's two sides of the same coin. It doesn't matter which president is in, the agenda moves on. Now, a lot of my listeners were, at least initially anyway, they were very much on the Trump bandwagon and very supportive of him and critical of me for not, you know, supporting him or giving him more of a chance. Fair enough. At least they stayed with me. They didn't abandon me. Is it fair to say that, I mean, Donald Trump... Maybe I should ask a question. Why didn't Donald Trump, and why hasn't Donald Trump? I know he spoke in Florida a few nights ago or a few days ago. Why hasn't Donald Trump spoken out more about this, about what's going on?
Well, I think that you're right. The left and the right are two wings of the same bird. And I think there were reasons why they wanted Trump in there. It restored faith in the electoral system in America. But if you don't mind my saying so, I'm half Jewish myself. He was more pro-Israel than he was pro-America. He bombed Syria just like Biden is getting criticized for doing now. He dropped cruise missiles on it twice.
Yeah.
But Biden I will say this much, that Trump supporters are very good people. They are constitutionalists. They are supporters of gun rights. They are patriotic, and they have basic moral values. Biden obviously lost the election. However, there was the scandalous evidence for vote rigging, which was overwhelming, from whistleblowers and from affidavits and from you could see computer fraud right on the TV screen as they switched votes from Trump to Biden. And you had Trump trucks coming in with dumping mail-in votes for Biden, thousands of them in the middle of the night, and none for Trump. I mean, it was just insane. This man is obviously senile. Who knows who's really giving the orders? It can't be this man, or not much for longer. But one problem with both Trump and Biden, although I will say that Trump did advocate hydroxychloroquine, and he did defund the World Health Organization. Those are both good moves.
James, can I jump in? Can I jump in very briefly? Excuse me for interrupting.
Sure.
No, just briefly. He did for a while. If you and I are both right, and I think we are, that it doesn't matter to the agenda or to the hidden hand which president is in, because things progress anyway. I'm wondering why they would cheat Trump and throw the election to Biden. Now, I'm not saying that Trump wasn't cheated out of the election. I don't know if he was or wasn't. I agree with you. I've seen some of these videos. I've seen some of this evidence. And I did admit last year that it's disconcerting. But I also think that it doesn't really matter. It matters not a damn, really. So, funnily enough, James, before the election, and this is true and I can prove this, before the election actually took place, I said on my radio show, if I was controlling things, I would give the election to Biden and make it look like Trump was cheated. I actually said that. I must have some sort of evil gene somewhere in my body. No, but I did say that. So I'm not saying that he wasn't cheated, but I'm wondering, is it some sort of just massive psychological operation on the people in general, and if it doesn't really matter? Now, tell me I'm wrong.
Well, I think they wanted Biden in. I think that they're done with the type of foreign policy that Trump was implementing. Israel is sort of independent at this point. It's as you know, it's gotten recognition from various oil-rich states in the the Middle East, and I think that they're ready to discard America. Basically, I think that they're ready to implement Bolshevism here. We're seeing horrific appointees under Biden. He's already signed numerous executive orders. I don't know if it's really him who's signing them. There's one handwriting expert who said that it doesn't look like his real signature on these orders. But you know, they're replacing legislation, which is supposed to be done by the Congress, with executive orders. This is happening on a state level as well. It's very troubling. And I foresee a future of – we're already seeing our Bill of Rights discarded, you know, due to the COVID lockdown. We have no jury trials. We have no right to peaceably assemble. We have lost basically our freedom of worship, except in a very limited manner. So the Bill of Rights have been discarded, and I think that there's going to be a crackdown. You know, this whole thing about the invasion of the U.S. Capitol, they weren't worried when – Antifa and Black Lives Matter were burning down Minneapolis. In fact, they were screaming, defund the police. It looks to me as if they're getting ready for a real persecution of conservatives and patriots. And this is demonstrated, of course, by the social media, Twitter, Facebook, and the other platforms. YouTube especially is being bad on this. Anybody who says anything against the government or Bill Gates' narrative is immediately eliminated. I have, you know, I've done two interviews with good people in alt media, including a fellow nurse from Massachusetts. They're having really trouble uploading onto BitChute. I don't know if this is a technical problem or not, but I'm taking steps to make sure that those videos are made public. But there's a tremendous amount of censorship, and I believe that censorship will precede persecution. I believe we have persecution at our doorstep unless we massively resist this new global reset that they have
in
mind.
You're right on that. James Perloff is our guest. Just a couple of points on that. I'm convinced that the so-called storming of the Capitol, I'm convinced that was staged. I really am. It looked to me that looked like the... Listen, I'm no expert, obviously. It's just my opinion. That looked very much like a stand-down situation. It looked
You're
like
right.
Trump was set up. It looked dreadful. On the Trump defunding the World Health Organization, Liz has pointed out, she says, James Corbett. Well, I can tell you this, Liz. I said the very same thing to guests on this programme last year. I said it myself. Trump, on the one hand, appeared to defund the World Health Organization. But on the other hand, what he took from the WHO, he gave to Gavi, didn't he? He gave to Bill Gates. So,
yes.
Yeah,
correct.
This is the thing, you know, with Trump. So I don't know, James. These are crazy times. I'm going to ask you, right? You've been around, when I say around the block, it's not meant in any way to be, to be disrespectful. Not at all. It's a respectful term. You've been writing for years, watching this very closely for many years. Right now, You talk about the Great Reset and where all of this is going. I'm pessimistic. I am. And like I look at the arrogance of these people. You will probably know by now, I'm sure you do, you've got your eyes and ears wide open, that the World Economic Forum tweeted the other day that lockdowns have been great for cities. The arrogance of these people. And then after a deluge of abuse, a torrent of abuse, the World Economic Forum deleted that very tweet. But this is where it's going now. Today we had an academic from Oxford University come out and say that they are now in a position, we can now scientifically and forensically tell you how many people die a year because of climate change. I'm convinced, and I think you might be as well, you've been looking into this longer than me, that they're going to use the success of lockdown. They're going to cite it as a possible way to deal with climate change as we go ahead. I can't see a way out of it, James. And I don't come on air to be pessimistic and to say that it's all over. You know, I don't believe it's all over necessarily. But right now, I can't see the likes of Klaus Schwab and his cronies and Gates and all of these foot soldiers. I can't see them not getting where they want to be. Social credit model, Great Reset. To me right now, they're doing well. They're in the lead. Give me some optimism, my friend.
Well, one thing that is hopeful is, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who I'm sure you're familiar with, one of the great battlers against the COVID vaccines, has said that our last best hope is the courts. Now, I know they have a lot of judges in their back pockets, but we've seen a number of judges make good decisions here in the United States. For example, in some of our worst states, California, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, executive orders have been overturned by courts and judges. And here in Massachusetts, the state that I live in, the governor tried to close all gun shops, but a judge overruled that. And then when he tried to close all churches, he was challenged with a lawsuit and he backed down. I think that if we challenge these people locally, there's a chance they'll back down. And one person I really admire, I'm sure you're familiar with his name, Rainer Fulmich, the German attorney who successfully sued Volkswagen and other major companies. I just saw the news item. I know he's been running class action lawsuits in multiple countries already about COVID. He wants this to be discussed in an open courtroom the way it should be, with, just like in any jury trial, you would have the defense and the prosecution both presenting their sides. The media is only presenting one side. But he is now suing the World Health Organization for defrauding the world. I pray he has success. If we can have victory in the courts, I think we have a chance. The other thing that gives me hope, besides the Bible, by the way, which I have to say, the Bible predicts a lot of this stuff. The whole mark of the beast thing, which isn't just the Bible now saying that. Bill Gates is funding what they call a digital tattoo, and this is not from me. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's from Rice School of Bioengineering. They say they're actually going to create a digital tattoo that will have your vaccine information in it, which will be readable by a specialized smartphone. So that would mean that you would have to hold up your hand to go into a supermarket to buy or sell something. That's very much like the mark of the beast. The Bible says in the book of Revelation that you cannot buy or sell without the mark of the beast upon you. So I see that as a hopeful sign, but I also see hope in the protest. In Germany, having 2 million protesters at once on the street, and in Serbia, they actually were able to overturn their curfew by battling on the streets. And I believe you referred to this earlier, or perhaps I'm thinking of someone else. I'm sorry, but in Denmark, I know that they stood outside the parliament banging pots and pans because of a very draconian law that was about to be passed, and finally the legislature gave in. And so if we fight back, if we resist hard enough, I do believe we have a chance to make them go back to the drawing board and withdraw this plan. But of course, it's very advanced. They have the money on their side, but thankfully we have God and the truth on our side.
Tony has just tweeted as Vinyl Man 3 on Twitter. I'll retweet it so you can see it yourself later on. Tony has just bought James's book from Book Depository, and he's looking forward to reading it. Thanks, Tony. Good man. The book we are referring to, that Tony has just purchased, of course, is James's book, of course, Red Pilled. I'm going to put links out to this now, right? This book about coronavirus that James published last year. He was on the programme back in September when he spoke to me about it. It's COVID-19 and the agendas to come. Do go to jamesperloff.net and purchase a copy of it. Do. And if you can't, download it. But I'm telling you, you've got to support the independent media. Listen, there was a time when I would have... I've never been a rude or aggressive radio presenter, but I would have listened to you talking there about the mark of the beast, and I would have been polite, and at the end of the show, I would have opened a beer and I would have said, Jesus, that Jimmy Perloff's a bit of a madman all the same, isn't he? He's lovely, but he's a bit mad. Not anymore, James. Not anymore, because it's the essence of the mark of the beast, what they're asking people to do. And I heard some talk over the weekend about neighbours harassing other neighbours to ask them if they had their vaccine passports. Because what the governments are going to do, of course, is they're going to say, we've got to keep the lockdowns in place. And we're going to say, why? And they're going to say, well, you're a very good person. You got your COVID vaccine. But Jimmy Perloff didn't. James Perloff didn't. Neither did James's friend. Neither did James's neighbour. They're bad people. I totally get where you're coming from with the Revelations reference. In the past, I would have been dismissive of it. Now I'm thinking, wow, it's eerily accurate, James. you know?
Well, you know something interesting, Richie, is that I heard when Dr. Cheryl Tenpenny was talking, I believe it was her interview, recent one she did, the remark was made that it seems that atheists are quicker to recognize this as the mark of the beast than many Christians are. And in fact, someone's pointed out the irony that churches are opening themselves as vaccine administration centers while at the same time closing themselves for worship.
Imagine.
This is truly an irony for the Christian church, which has obviously fallen from the high moral position it had many years ago, at least for many of our churches.
My previous guest, Jean Murray, who came on from Dublin, is a Christian as well. She blogs and she's aghast at the closing of churches and she can't understand. I've had John Waters on this programme, who's a very, very respected and brilliant Irish writer, a broadsheet writer for many, many years, and a writer of good books just like yourself. And John can't believe it. Where was the church leadership? Where were the priests, the parish priests? Where were the archbishops, James, to say this is evil, what you're doing to people? By God, we will not close our doors to our parishioners. But they did, they capitulated. And what you just said to me now has brought it home to me. How ironic, how wickedly ironic, to close your doors to prayer and to congregation, but to open them for a vaccine that could kill them. Wow. That's where we are.
That's where we are. We need to make every effort possible to inform people. A lot of people, they're, as you know, they're like brick walls. They're so blue-pilled. They've never listened to anything but the mainstream media all their lives. And I have a lot of friends who, they just have this frustration. They have family members. They try to talk to them, and their minds are just closed. They just can't get through. But what I tried to do with my book is to quote so many scientific, credible authorities that it's very hard to dismiss. But some of my friends say they wouldn't even open the book.
No, they won't.
Because, they're that hardened. Their hearts are that hardened.
So what will it take, James? Will it take for them to be on the street before they do something? Homeless, homeless, without a house.
You're making a great point. I've noticed that people are more open to listening to the harm of vaccines if they have a family member who's been harmed by vaccines. If they've got an autistic child who became autistic right after they got the MMR shot, for example, they're more open. And I'm hoping that because people are now jobless and suffering from debt and from the inability to pay rent because they have no job, because of the lockdown, because it is personally impacting them, that their ears will be open, that we can take the wax out of the ears and they'll start to listen objectively. And again, we have the truth on our side. We have logic on our side. I believe it's possible to turn the tide on this thing because, the mainstream media can only keep this going for so long. Again, I was very pleased. I saw you tweeted out a picture, which I put on my own website as that picture of the Daily Mail. And I think that what's happened, I may be wrong about this, but I think that some of the mainstream media journalists have had their own family members misdiagnosed as COVID victims when they clearly knew they died of a heart attack or died from cancer or something else. And so some of the mainstream media journalists are not willing to play ball any longer. And I think that the establishment, the deep state may have a problem on its hands trying to keep this thing going.
I agree. Can I just say this? We've got about 3 or 4 minutes left. William is listening to this with great interest in Scotland, and he's just sent me a link to a BBC story. This will make you grin. It's only been on the BBC website a few hours, actually. Anti-COVID vaccine tweets face 5 strikes ban policy. I'll read the first paragraph very quickly. Twitter is to ban users who repeatedly tweet harmful misinformation about COVID vaccines. Under the scheme, members will face a lock being placed on their account. Its duration will be determined by how many times they have posted misleading information about the jabs. 5 strikes mean you get a permanent ban. That's you gone, James. That's you gone. You're not going to last a week, I don't think. Can I ask you this, James? Do you think that it now has to be considered that social media companies were set up for one reason and one reason only – to basically kettle. You know that lovely term, kettling people, which the police, when people are protesting, they get kettled by the police. They get surrounded. Where Facebook and Twitter specifically Trojan horses designed to get everybody in the one place, at least in a cyber sense, so that we could be very easily then, you know, controlled in terms of what we do and don't see and blocked and banned. I mean, it looks obvious to me now. That's an astonishing story. Twitter saying you can't say anything negative about the COVID vaccines or we will ban you. I mean, you've just talked to me tonight about how we know that they are killing some people. We know this. It's not, you know, misinformation. It's a fact. But Twitter can say, well, you can't talk about that because we'll get rid of you. Wow, James, we're really here now.
Yes, they've adopted the persona of YouTube then, but it's absolutely, I think, true that all of these platforms were set up for control. You know, television, I wrote an article about the golden age of television back in the 1950s, when all the television was wholesome family entertainment. Why did they do that? They did it to get people to put TVs in their homes. And once they had everybody with a TV in their home, then they began to change the content. And I believe that they've done the same trick with Amazon. Amazon was once a place where you could sell or buy anything. But now Amazon has become weaponized against what we call the First Amendment here in America, the freedom of speech. They weaponize it. They censor any book that they don't like. And they know that they've got a monopoly established so that they can take that right of freedom of speech and freedom of reading away from people and actually burn books in a figurative sense. So yes, I believe that all these platforms, Zuckerberg and Bezos and Wojcicki with YouTube, they were all designed to lead us in, making us think that these were free platforms. But the day has come when freedom of speech has been abandoned completely.
And yet you're optimistic, which I love. You think that there will be a kind of a critical mass. And the more I think of it, the more I think, yeah, you know, I read some years ago, James, I can't remember who said it, but somebody said anyway, it was in a newspaper, I think, that when middle class people, now I hate the notion of class personally, as a lad who grew up in a council estate in Ireland, my dad was a factory worker. I hate this class thing. But anyway, look, we'll say middle class. I read some years ago, somebody said, when the middle class is destroyed, when everything is taken from them, then you'll have, well, the establishment will then have a real problem. Because the middle class is really what props up the system. You know, they trust governments. Middle class people, they've always got a couple of dollars in the bank and they can pay their mortgage and they don't really understand poverty or those kind of extremes. But the author of this piece said years ago, if it's taken away from the middle class, then you might get a revolution. Do you go along with that?
Well, I don't know, but I certainly am all for a revolution against what's happening to us, because if we don't resist it, if we don't revolt against it, then it's going to be the camps for us. It's going to be complete totalitarian state. Britain is moving that way. New Zealand, Australia, America, and Europe are moving in that direction. It's obvious who they've got their eyes on. This is where they feel they have the most resistance, and this is what they want to, these are the areas that they want to suppress the most. I think that's reasonable to say. So we need to use our best skills, despite the disadvantages they've given us, to fight against this system. I know this is pleasing to God. He doesn't want our world run by Luciferians. He wants it run by people who tell the truth and do what's right. But we've seen this coming for a long time. You know, I wrote a book in 1988 called The Shadows of Power. It was about the coming world government. I didn't know we'd see it in our day, but we've seen it now. I didn't know it'd be a medical move towards a world government. But Catherine Austin Fitz has put this very well in perspective. She says this was a central banker's plan all along, but and COVID is simply the mechanism that they, it's not really about COVID. It's about establishing world authoritarian, totalitarian control. It's Orwellian. It's the world George Orwell envisioned.
Folks, go to James's website. It's jamesperloff.net. Please do check it out. The book we have been discussing is COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, Red Pilled. James has been kind enough to offer a free download there, but take it from me, don't take it for free if you can afford it. It isn't expensive. Buy the book if you can afford it and support excellent journalism. God knows there's not much of it around. JamesPerloff.net. James, thanks for your time today. Don't be a stranger. Let us know when you've got something to say that needs to be shouted loud. You know the door is always open here, my friend. Thanks for coming back today.
Well, Richie, thank you for all that you're doing. You're a voice for freedom in the UK and in Europe. And what you do is truly appreciated by me and by countless others. So thank you. We are the and you are the thin line that's still defending the world against this tyranny.
Thanks, James. Really appreciate that. You look after yourself now. Live from Massachusetts, you've just been listening to the one and only James Perloff. And that website again is jamesperloff.net. Get on there and support good independent journalism. All righty. What are we now? Coming up for not too far away from 5 minutes to the top of the hour. That's gone quick, that. Eh? Time flies when you're riveted. And I was riveted to my guest today. Jean Murray. Really enjoyed having Jean on the programme. Check Jean out on Twitter. Find her on Twitter. Find my tweets to Jean. And you can follow her there. And her WordPress site is jeanmurray120.wordpress.com. That is jeanmurray120.wordpress.com. I couldn't tell you for the life of me who's on the programme tomorrow. Couldn't tell you. I don't know why I can't tell you. Thursday, the great Spiro Skouras has been a friend of mine for a long time. He'll be back on the show. You love Spiro. Lot to talk about with him. And, I've not nothing else to say to you. Lots of tweets tonight. Thanks for them, by the way. BBG Richie on Twitter. If you haven't checked out my website, my brand new all singing and all dancing website, it's richieallen.co.uk. Put 5 articles on there today and it will be updated regularly with brand new articles. And you will see very soon some guest writers. Yes, guest writers will be appearing on the website as well. And I'm very, very happy about that. Take a bit of pressure off of me, don't you know? Don't you know? Okay then, I will take my leave of you. You look after yourselves and one another. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening. And we'll do it all again tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Right, okay. Oh, the budget's tomorrow, isn't it? Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, expected to announce some tax increases. Well, I suppose I'll be reporting on that tomorrow. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. Anyway, thanks again to James Perloff, jamesperloff.net. That's the website. And to Jean Murray from Dublin. Bye now. Enjoy the rest of your day. As I've already said, take care of each other. Bye.